Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
This week's episode is sponsored by Vitel. They provide business telephone systems' latest technology, customised and tailored to suit business requirements, remote management and configuration. Their selling points are that they lower costs by removing line rentals, increase flexibility and fit in with the business, rather than making the business fit in with their phone system. They're based in mainland UK.
Hi, Charlotte Martin here. I play the character you love to hate, Susan Carter. Get your questions to me on dumptydum.com via SpeakPipe, because I'll be joining Lucy and Royfield on the show on October the 24th for a Village Shop special. So get your tabards and name badges at the ready, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Dum, 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 dum. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the pub lavatory that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the overfilled colostomy bag that is...
Lucy Freeman. And with us, we have Borchester Barrister of the Month, Anna Tregoran, a.k.a...
Isabel Middleton.
Because I know you listen to Dumpty Dum every week.
I do.
You're such a fibber.
I do! I listened to the last one today while I was walking my dog.
Really?
So, yeah. So I do listen to it.
Oh, thank you. Woohoo! My favourite barrister. I tell you what, she's better than Rumpole of the Bailey.
Well, prettier as well.
Well, that's purely...
too long, that
subjective.
Silence was too long.
It's purely subjective. But you know what? That Leo McKern, he wasn't easy on the eye, was he, to be fair?
Oh, he was lovely, though.
It's a low bar. Lovely. If you're comparing yourself to him, it's a very low bar, but you are. You absolutely are.
I don't know whether I feel insulted or flattered.
And the last part of our closing time punch-up, folks, is you. Now, today's dum-de-dum is... Oh, crumbs. It's one from the vaults, because I completely and utterly forgot to put in, on the rundown of the script, who it was going to be. So I'm going to take... potluck on our archive, folks. But Lucy, Next week we're going to be more prepared, aren't we? Because we're going to get a fresh Dumpty Dum. Now, if somebody wants to send a fresh one in, how do they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, give us a plot prediction, or deliberately mislabel some chutney, then ring us on 0203031315 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us, to Shambridges for her lovely voices, and to Derek for the loan in the back bedroom. Derek was very annoyed after the Flour and Produce show as he just missed out on winning Guess the Weight of Auntie Cardboard. He was he was 2 tons out, apparently.
Wow, folks. We have a bumper show for you this week, because we not only have Isabel Middleton, but we have calls from Blythe Spirit, who's leading the pro Emma Charge, Witherspoon, who wants to know why everyone hates couples therapy, Paul Room, who thinks Kirsty's up the clanger, Claire, who wants to fire Rob, Debs, who's getting wound up by Adam, bye bye Steve, who thinks that Rex deserves it, Vicky Cole, who understands Ian, Annalisa, who's loving Helen, New York Nigel, who says, won't anyone think of the colostomy bag, Amy, who agrees with Jill, Auntie Jean, who's instigated shit of the week, Goddess Diva, who's cheering Emma, Millie Bell, who thinks David's a bad parent, Yokel Bear, who applauds continuity, Sarah, who likes the trajectory of Rob, Naked Fingers, who thinks Brighton may be revealed, John the First, who's seeing signs and omens, Tiny Ray Ray, who thinks Chris's trousers may be coming down, Jan from Cannes, who's discovered a secret relative, Jack Smith, who's desperately speaking Charlotte, and Christina, who's given up and is going to change her company's name because Royfield can't pronounce it. But first, folks, before the interview, before the caller in, is Lucy V. Freeman's week in Ambridge.
We began the week with Jill lifting a huge amount of something, which was very heavy, and Toby offering to help, and then Pip offering to help move the big lot of whatever it was too. I couldn't quite understand what the big heavy thing was, and I was going to go back and listen again, and then I realised that I didn't actually care. Titchy Knob and his first encounter with Giddy Jack was eventful. Giddy Jack screamed and shat himself, which shows what an excellent judge of character he must be, and at such a tender age. Hootie Jill went round the Flour and Produce show crowing and hooting about how much she'd won, and the man from the Echo took her photo covered in chutney, and then she realised it wasn't even her chutney. Somehow, this turned out to be Toby's fault. To be fair to him, as far as Jill is concerned, Toby is entirely responsible for everything from global warming to the rise of neo-fascism. Anyway, Susan made her feel better by reassuring her that no one would realise that she'd attempted to cheat the judges blind and get her sticky mitts on the Frieda Fry trophy. The Frieda Fry trophy is a small model of Frieda, cast in silage, with one hand on her hot pot and the other on Bert's marrow. We spent some time with adenoidal Alice as she planned a monster party with cupcakes and locally sourced beef burgers, apparently. Oh, it's like Mardi Gras. Adenoids seems to be getting posher by the minute. She was fairly slow-ny before, but now she sounds like Princess Eugenie. I can't listen to her without picturing that bizarre poached egg thing on her head. Don't forget to invite your two-timing twat of a brother, will you, Alice? Said Jenny, darling. That didn't entirely work out as planned, as Adenoids finished up calling him a two-timing twat. In fact, Alice was so spectacularly holier-than-thou about the whole gentleman's buttonhole debacle that I strongly suspect Chris is going to be found with his anvil right up someone from the Pony Club. The party itself sounded like the kind of thing I would run 2 miles away from in tight shoes. Adenoids, who is rapidly taking on Kate's mantle as most annoying archer, decided to wheel Ed round as rent-a-peasant. He turned up dressed as he normally is in some sacking with a straw hat and odd wellies singing I am a Zoida drinker, only to find himself being wheeled around Kate's friends, who were all Dominic and were terribly bleeding edge clever apparently, and who held the future of British farming in their hands. This is my friend Ed, who like digs stuff with like a spade, not a drone. No, honestly, say hello, Ed. Listen to this, he's amazing. Bearing in mind the amount of times Ed's family has exploited the horny-handed sons of toil persona in order to exploit money from the general public, Ed shouldn't be that surprised that he's used like a sort of Wurzel Gummidge vivant, I suppose. The only person that enjoyed the party less than Ed was Rex. Even though Ed is no stranger to the woman he loves knobbing his brother, at least she had the grace never to do it in front of him. Rex caught Pip and Toby in flagrante de snoggo, and despite Toby's assurances that it was all entirely Pip who chased after him screaming, fill me with your little babies, Rex is predictably gutted. But after the somewhat arch way Pip handled the whole situation, I think the best he can do is find someone nice. Christy, maybe, if he can wrestle her off Sausage Boy. The stars were out for Susan in Ambridge, or rather the stars were off, as Susan's self-applied nipple tassels started dropping off calendars all over the place. Jennifer visited Adam and pulled up a back box of scampi fries to have a chat with him while he sat cuddled up with a cardboard cutout of the steak covered in ready salted peanuts. He said he was fine. It's all fine. It's all my fault. I deserve to die. Then Brian came along and said, well, thank you very much, Adam. You've made everyone in my house even more annoying than they were already. Then hurriedly capitulated and gave him some advice for a long and happy marriage. Basically, Adam, you need to find a dense social climber who's really good at puddings, like Jenny, and marry them. And then every time you get caught potting the black, buy them a kitchen. Josh and Johnny.
You can't say that, Lucy. It's really bad. I'm sorry, Middle England.
Josh and Johnny, or rather Father Ted and Father Dougal, as I like to think of them, those chickens were resting in my account, went off looking for a mower. They found one that only had 47 million miles on the clock, two careful owners and one lunatic, air conditioning, surround sound, and a massive choppy bit on the front. Something dodgy went on, I'm not sure what, but David's finished coughing up the difference between what the mower would have cost if Josh had behaved decently and what the mower actually costs now that Josh had robbed the cellar blind, with Johnny standing in the background saying, ah, right, Josh. And we ended with a scene that had me dancing round my kitchen, cackling like a maniac. At last, at bloody last, someone told Titchinob that they weren't very happy with him, which everyone has singularly failed to do so far. Emma, or rather Baroness Grundy of Grange Farm, because surely if ever a woman had a right to a title, it's now Emma after that performance, had a right pop at a Larry Titchinob in the bogs at the Bull. She stood there, hands on the hips of her juicy couture, wagged her finger about and said what we've all been saying, but without the swearing. And then joy of joys, lovely David and gentleman Jazza dragged him out and dumped him on his arse. Oh, what bliss it was to be alive. The end.
Lucy, I really enjoyed that this week. What did you rank to it, Isabel?
I thought it was marvellous. I think it should be on the radio.
If you, because I know you've got like power and influence at the BBC now.
Huge, yes.
Yeah, huge. Which of the BBC channels would you place Lucy's monologue?
Six Music.
Well done. Who's your Six Music DJ of choice?
Oh, Sean Keaveney.
Really? Why?
Oh, I just think he's like man of the people, isn't he? He's like you, Roy Field. You know, he's easy to listen to. He's a bit of a he's lovely. He just sounds like a really nice bloke. I like having him in my kitchen. That sounded rude, didn't it?
No, that's totally fine. If you said you liked having him in your bedroom, that would have sounded rude.
Well, I've had him in the bathroom.
Oh.
Now I'm getting into dangerous territory now.
I think we should just properly start with our chat, because you know what? This is definitely a family podcast and we won't have any smutty or pun-related references.
No smut. I know that that's off the cards, definitely.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm tip-top.
First rate. Very good.
Anyone ever told you that you look like Julie Andrews?
No, that's a first. Is it just because I'm wearing my tie and tails?
There you go. And sporting a rather large cigar.
Indeed. I like to of a Friday afternoon.
Ooh.
I feel I've deserved it.
I like your style and vibes, madam. So how's your week been? Good?
I can't believe it's Friday, actually. Mm-hmm. It's been one of those weeks where one minute it was Monday and now it's Friday and I don't know what's happened in between. So
Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday?
Possibly. But then I could just have been sucked back through a space-time continuum into the 1970s.
You need to stop it, because I've read your IMDb profile. It says nothing about you being Doctor Who's companion.
Oh, no. Well, if only. I'm still hoping.
But you know what? It's pretty extensive, isn't it? Because, you know...
My CV or... Yes. Or the space-time continuum.
Both. But let's leave metaphysics and science fiction to one side. If we deal with your career, you've been on every soap going other than Corrie.
It's true. So, yes, makers of Corrie.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you're listening. I have in my time. Yeah, I mean, I've been around the block a bit. And, I've done a little bit on EastEnders. I've done a little bit on family affairs. Mm-hmm. I've done doctors. I mean, I don't know. Probably people are horrified now because some of these things are not considered soaps, are they? I have to be very careful about the, you know, how we word these things because people get upset. But yes, I've been in some soaps and some serial dramas.
So, as you said, you've been about a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've done movies. So, you know.
Well, I've done very small parts in very small movies.
Well, the last time I checked, Harry Potter is a bona fide movie.
Yes, but don't be confused.
Mm-hmm.
I did the video game. I didn't do the movie.
Oh.
This has been, a fairly frequent mistake in my in various places I've gone. I actually once went on holiday. I mm-hmm. won a holiday. This is no word of a lie. By filling in a questionnaire that fell out of a magazine.
Uh-huh.
And I just filled it in for the sheer hell of it, sent it off. And about 2 months later, a very nicely spoken woman phoned me and told me that I had won a weekend in Carcassonne, courtesy of Country Life magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously thought this was a friend of mine taking the piss, but it wasn't. And so we went and had this amazing five-star weekend in an incredible hotel in Carcassonne. And while we were there, I couldn't understand why all the staff were being so attentive and delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that they'd obviously Googled me and thought that I had been in the latest Harry Potter film. And eventually this woman came up and said, could I have your autograph? It's for my son. He loves Harry Potter. And I said, yes, you do realize I just was a voice in the video game of the Order of the Phoenix. Unfortunately, because she was French, she didn't understand what I was saying, and my French is pretty lousy. But that's the misconception, that I was in the film, and actually I wasn't. So I'm sorry to disappoint you, Roy.
Listen, I'm absolutely not disappointed, because I've never watched one Harry Potter movie, never read the books. I'm one of the few people in the Western world that's done neither.
Well, there you are. You're
part
of a very exclusive club.
Absolutely. To me, you're just Anna Tregaron, total shiro.
But thank you very much. Thank you. It's lucky it turned out the way it did, isn't it?
Well, with you on the case, there's only ever going to be one outcome, surely.
Well, yes, this is true. What can I say? I hold my hands up and say that for all the obfuscation that must have gone on beforehand, mm-hmm. she pulled it out of the bag, didn't she?
She did. She did. She did. Now, how did you get the role? How did you hear about it? Because I'm a bit worried about my Googling that I've done previous to this, all about you. Because according to Google, you know, you were Hermione Granger in Harry Potter. So that's all gone to crap. But according to Google, you're a lifelong Archers fan. So first off, tell us how you got the role, and then tell us about you being sat on your nanny's knee listening to the strains of the Borchester Chimes, so to speak.
Indeed. I am. I'll tell you about Granny in a minute. But yes, I got the job.
Mm.
I'd always wanted to do an episode of The Archers. And about 2 years ago, I told my agent, who, you know, there was a bit of a dip in things, and they were like, right, what do you want to do? And I said, boy, do you know what I'd really love to do? I would love to do an episode of The Archers. I've done some radio in my time, but never done that. So a few kind of emails were obviously fired off, and it just happened to land at the right moment when I was called in to do one episode. I came in to play the emergency doctor who arrived by helicopter to take care of Tony when he was attacked by Otto the Bull.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one lovely day recording this episode and had an absolute blast on it. And at the time, the editor, and therefore the man in charge, was Sean O'Connor. And mm-hmm. Sean and I have crossed paths over our career several times, and I'm very fond of Sean. And I wrote him a little card and said how lovely it was to have come to Ambridge for the day, and that if he ever thought that there might be a further opportunity to come back, would he bear me in mind? And mm-hmm. he very sweetly said, yes, of course. And sure enough, 18 months later, I had a phone call saying, how would you like to come back to Ambridge? And we had a very hush-hush meeting about mm-hmm. the whole thing. And I obviously...
On a scale of 1 to 10...
Yeah.
10 being like KGB, MI5, CIA lockdown.
Yeah.
What was it? You know, what was the number on this?
Oh my god, it was like 45.
Really?
Really, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody anything Crumbs. About it, and in fact, I wasn't told very much about it. I mean, I was a bit like one of Josh's future mushrooms. I was really kept in the dark, and I was kind of, it was, you know, you were told what you needed to know, but that was about it. But mm-hmm. obviously I was given a heads up on what the storyline was and what the, you know, the character was up to a point. But no, it was very much, we absolutely, you know, rely on you to keep this to yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't tell your family, don't tell your parents, don't tell anyone who's going to blab about it. So for, I had about 3 months before I started where I was just bursting. So I was so thrilled to have been asked. You know, very excited, obviously, as a listener, I had followed the storyline very closely. So to think that I was going to be involved in something that I knew was, you know, making waves and to a certain extent making some sort of history on the radio and everything was very exciting. But I couldn't tell a soul. I mean, I did tell my partner, because otherwise I think I'd have spontaneously combusted and you know, not been able to live like a normal person. But until I actually started it. And then, of course, once we started recording, we couldn't tell anybody what was going on. And I mean, you know, it's, you only get the scripts a few days before you start recording the episode. So, you know, it's not as if you have a long time to go, oh, my God, this is going to happen and then that's going to happen. But it was a real case of keeping it stumm, you know. I mean, everybody does that out of loyalty and affection for the programme and for the listeners.
So what did you do to kind of let Jen up in you know, up for the part of Anna? Did you take to the bottle? Did you start wearing barrister's wigs? What, you know?
Well, obviously all of the above.
Are you partial to a little bit of gin?
I don't mind gin. I kind of prefer vodka, to be honest, but
oh,
I do.
Me too.
When my mum and I get together, we'll have a gin and tonic together. I mean, that's my real mum.
Okay,
not my Ambridge mum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge spirits drinker. I have to say that actually, a bit like Anna, mm-hmm. I'm quite fond of the whiskey.
Oh,
but whiskey isn't so fond of me. So I just. Little and, you know, infrequently.
So when you get together with your Ambridge mum, do you have a little bit of a toke on a bit of a split?
I beg your pardon, what are you insinuating? Well, a toke?
She likes a bit of a smoke, doesn't she? Well, she likes hemp-based kind of food products. So.
I have no idea to what you're referring, Royfield. She's a fine, upstanding member of the community. As far as I know, that she likes to dabble in some, you know, herbs and medicines. Mm-hmm. I'm saying no more about Carol. But she's a wise woman.
Now, you have written about being part of the entertainment industry. And I'm going to quote you on this.
Oh, God. Okay. It,
the entertainment theatre industry is dirty and beautiful by equal measure. Now, which bit of Ambridge is dirty and which bit's beautiful? I'm only quoting back to you what you've written.
I don't ever recall writing that. I don't know where your okay. source is.
All right. The source was on a website where you answered a young female actor's kind of worries about getting involved with the industry. And you, as an actor of some 20 years vintage, said, I'm an actress from 20 years vintage, and here it is, young lady, blah, blah, blah. There you go.
My God, I've obviously had a lot of gin since then.
We research this show, you know. People think we just throw it together, but oh no, sir.
I'm very impressed. Mm-hmm. I'm very impressed. Well, I think obviously I was talking in a lot of sense. the trouble is, I haven't really, I mean, in character terms, I haven't really, you know, got to see a lot of Ambridge. So I could only really talk about the, you know, dirty and beautiful within my own immediate vicinity. Mm. I imagine that probably Anna Tregoran's bedroom at her mother's house is quite dirty. I think she's probably a bit of a slut, isn't she? But goes to work looking absolutely pristine.
You said slut. Did you mean slob?
Maybe I did. Yes, that was obviously a Freudian slip.
I hope you're not revealing future storylines.
Oh, my God. I would never do such a thing on pain of death. And also because, quite frankly, I can't because I don't know them. My lad.
Good answer. Good answer. So how integral to the part of Anna is her sexuality? Because that's the one thing which kind of had people on tenterhooks when there was all this talk of Max. Were you aware of all the online speculation?
I was. I mean, I did, obviously, you know, there was a bit of a sort of Twitter storm going over the whole sort of Archer's, you know, build up to the trial. And ever since, you know, the unfortunate incidents in Blossom Hill Cottage, I had kept an eye on Twitter.
Were they
Although
unfortunate?
I have to say,
I think
I have
they
to
were
say that
very
I, sorry.
Fortunate. I think he had that coming and more.
Well, I obviously couldn't comment on that. Being most unprofessional. I did keep an eye on it. And yes, of course, you know, the whole Max thing was a sort of, you know, things went off at a bit of a tangent. Mm-hmm. I mean, my own feeling about it is I obviously knew that Anna was a lesbian. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first things that I was told about.
And seamlessly.
Yeah, sure. Let me try and think what I was saying. I was saying that I think, you know, one of the main reasons they brought in the Max backstory was so that, you know, there would be added jeopardy to, you know, the entire situation with Helen. And, you know, I know that a lot of people were kind of amused and equally irritated by the idea of the Ambridge fairy suddenly dropping in this amazing, you know, barrister who specialised in domestic violence. And I think the idea that she would have just gone in and been brilliant from start to finish would not have been very interesting. And I, you know, obviously think they wanted to give a bit of a backstory, the fact that she, you know, was having a sort of terrible, wobbly, emotional life, but could she still, you know, continue to be a good professional? And I think, I mean, I'd like to think it made it more interesting. I mean, people seem to take pleasure in taking bets on whether Max was a male or female. It was a little something else to think about rather than the impending trial.
Well, I must admit, it kind of tripped us up a little because I declared on this globally renowned podcast that follows all things Ambridge that Max was a geezer.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
Well, quite a few people were absolutely convinced, and it did make me laugh because I saw a few tweets where people were going, well, I've gone back over it and I've listened to it, and she definitely said him.
Yes.
And I was here going, I've never said him. I have never used he, you know, because obviously I'd said the word, so I knew that I hadn't. So it's very interesting.
I parroted one of those self-same tweets. So,
there we are. But isn't it interesting? It's interesting what one wants to hear or what one thinks one hears. Mm. It's not always accurate, but I don't know. I think some people probably might have got a little irritated about that as a kind of, you know, it was a sideline that was going on. But as far as I was concerned, it was nice to have another story layer to play as well as just being, you know, Helen's barrister. So who knows where that will lead.
So give us a sense of how much of your kind of working month is taken up by, you know, being Anna.
Well, I mean, it varies. I mean, the way that we work is that we record episodes in blocks. So realistically, if I was heavily featured in a block, which will be a month's episodes, you're basically working 2 weeks on and 3 weeks off.
Mm-hmm.
So in those 3 weeks, the script writers are all hard at work, scratching away. And then over a period of 2 weeks, the production leaps into action and we record them. So, but obviously, depending on whether your storyline is being featured or you have much to do, you might be in one episode in that block, none, or, you know, half a dozen or a dozen. So, you know, you probably know the month before how many you're going to be in. And you just sort of cross your fingers and hope that you haven't been sent to Devon or where it is people go to be quiet.
So I suppose when you get like the call or the email to say we need you up in Birmingham, that's like the equivalent to an actor hearing that they need to go to LA or something, I presume. Why are you laughing? Well, my hometown.
I'm very fond of Birmingham. I went to university in Birmingham, so I spent 3 years there. So I have a deep affection for Birmingham. And you're absolutely right, Royfield. It's just like being summoned to LA.
What did you study?
Drama and theatre arts at the university. Uh-huh. Which was, we had a... It was a good course. I had a brilliant time in Birmingham. I mean, I have to say that probably these days students have to work a lot harder than we did. Mm. But it was a good course, and Birmingham's a great place to be. And we had some interesting alumni, and my department produced, you know, people as diverse and wonderful as Victoria Wood and Simon Le Bon. To name a few that were my predecessors, but I had a great time. It was half academic and half practical, so you know you got to have a good sort of understanding of drama and, you know, theatre and playwriting and all that kind of thing. So,
and you've never left the theatre completely behind, have you? Because you are a little bit of a producer, and don't you have a play that kind of you're cooking in your oven right now?
Oh, I have a few plays that are probably completely dried out in the oven of my creativity. No, I'm always. I mean, there have been times, it has to be said, and I probably think that most actors would, if they were being honest, would say that at some point in their career they've gone, oh my god, can I bear it any longer, that's it, I'm going to pack it in, I'm going to do something else, I'm going to do something completely normal where I don't have to deal with my own demons on a daily basis and rejection and all that kind of thing. And I have thought about that, but ultimately I'm a creative person, and I think if, as long as I can kind of be creating in some shape or form, I mean, I think that's absolutely essential for me, and as I'm sure it is for most, you know, most creative people. But, you know, I've turned my hand, you know, I paint, I write. I've produced a short film, you know, so I'm, even if I'm not able to act, and it has to be said, you know, these days it's quite hard to carve out a career, particularly, you know, at my age. So you have to kind of, you know, branch out. And I think as long as you're still producing something or creating something, then you can stay alive.
So you talked about the difficulty of being an actor of a certain age. Mm-hmm. Is that markedly different for female actors?
Well, I know there's a big debate about this. I think it is very different for female actors. I think, you know, the bottom line is that there are many more men working in our industry, you know, whether that's TV, radio, theatre, whatever, and have been for centuries. So it is still very heavily male dominated, and that includes, you know, writers, producers, directors, all that kind of thing. And until that balance changes, you know, there will be less parts for female actors. You know, I think it's really important that we encourage and we really get behind women, you know, breaking through that glass ceiling, which does still exist. I mean, working in television, I could probably only name you perhaps half a dozen female TV directors that work consistently, whereas, you know, there are endless guys that do it. And it's nothing to do with their ability. It's just there is still, you know, there is still difficulty. There are still barriers in that way. And I think, you know, so it's largely about kind of numbers and accessibility. I'm not saying that, you know, actresses in particular, as opposed to actors, are kind of, you know, pushed out. There is just less work for them. There are less parts for them. There is also that. I mean, I do believe that there is a difference when you kind of hit middle age. I think, you know, you can it's not just in my my work, it's not just in my industry, but it's men have a much greater longevity. You know, men, it's acceptable for men to continue doing things that women are kind of frowned upon for doing at the same age. You know, they can, whether it's having children in their 70s or still being considered silver foxish and attractive, and you know, capable of earning a good wage, where I think there is a sort of invisibility that sort of drifts over you. If you're not, I mean, fine, if you're in the front line all the time and you're, you know, that I think there is a massive pressure on those women that are successful to keep their feet there and to keep looking good and all that kind of thing. But I think it's very difficult. Women have to necessarily, if they have children, take time out and then try and fight their way back in again. So I don't think it's a myth. I think it's a reality. I would love to see that balance change.
How important is it for an actor who's in a committed relationship to have an understanding partner, would you say? So you can, you know, as you can maybe go in and out of the industry, finding roles, not the stresses and the strains, etc.
I think it's absolutely essential. I mean, I know plenty of actors who are single and are doing very well for themselves. And I'm sure that they will, you know, some of them would like to have a partner that they could, you know, share that with, the successes and the and the not so successful moments. You know, I've been very fortunate, and I can only really talk about my relationship, but you know, we're both actors, and I think it's essential that you have someone who completely understands and gets what you're trying to do. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to, you know, be in a relationship with another actor. It's just there's a shorthand there, obviously. But you know, quite often there are long periods of unemployment, and there are long, which, you know, can turn into long periods of self-doubt. There's a lot of soul searching. If you're not somebody that is particularly keen on, you know, networking and all that kind of thing, it's good to have someone behind you who's going, come on, put yourself forward for that, do that. And also someone who's prepared for you to go, listen, I got that job, I leave tomorrow and I'm away for 11 weeks. You know, that takes a particular type of person to be cool about that. So I think
I can imagine that would be a problem if, you know, if every other week you got to say, I'm off to Birmingham, the bright lights of Birmingham, you know, potentially the whole load of kind of, you know, jealousy could be wrought into a relationship.
Exactly. Well, yes, I think that's right. Fortunately, I have a very understanding partner who obviously shares my love of Birmingham and understands that sometimes I just have to go there on my own.
So kind of to end up, how much, because it's very interesting what you said about your relationship with Sean, and that's kind of helped you to get the role of Anna. How much of you is Anna? And I kind of say this because of, it's the direct kind of opposite to what you said about your relationship with, you know, the fact that you have a strong and kind of very, very understanding one, and the fact that Anna doesn't. But if I am, and, you know, I unscientifically just listened to this thing, and then I've just decided to produce this silly podcast for the last 2.5 years. But the characters that are in it the longest and the characters that are the most beloved seem to be the ones where, in effect, the writers after a time have written the character around that actor as opposed to the other way around. So how much of Anna is there in you and vice versa?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think, and I do think that is, it's kind of unavoidable in any continuing drama. You know, that if you have long-standing characters who, you know, you don't know what they're doing from one month to the next because the story is always developing, and you know they're interacting with other long-standing characters, then I think it's unavoidable that the actor and the character are in some, in, you know, in, to some degree, enormously sort of tied in with each other. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, with Anna, I mean, obviously so far we've kind of only seen perhaps, you know, sort of two sides of her, which is one is the sort of, you know, the really dedicated professional lawyer, and the other side is the slightly flaky, I mean, she's quite sort of, she's a bit uptight at home, and, you know, that relationship she has with her mum and all that kind of thing. She's, I think, you know, that makes it interesting that she's emotionally not as in control as she is when she's at work. I think, personally, I am a much more well-balanced human being. I don't have that kind of flakiness that Anna has. But a lot of it is kind of my interpretation of what I'm reading on the page. And, you know, one would like to think that as the story develops, there will be elements of me that perhaps the script writers pick up on and go, oh, yeah, we could use that. And I will obviously try and incorporate whatever they write about Anna into the way I deliver it and the way I speak. And, you know, I'm not playing a huge, you know, cameo character role. And I say, I would sort of say that, you know, you put your hat on when you go in there and do it, but that hat is perhaps a hat that you might wear out in your real life on occasion.
Surely you mean wig.
Well, obviously, yes, my wig. Although I tend not to wear that when I'm jogging. There we are. There's a little difference between you. I hate jogging. Anna loves it, and she's really good at it. And but I don't. So there we are. There's a difference in our characters.
Thank you, Isabel.
You're very welcome, Royfield. It's very nice to talk to you.
Oh, she and half lovely, you know, Luce. But before we discuss Isabel Middleton and all of her loveliness, why don't we see who's on those caller inner lines?
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first?
We have Blythe Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Dumpty Dump, Blythe Spirit calling. Well, I've just finished listening to Friday's episode, actually on Friday. Social media has gone completely bonkers, and everyone is loving Emma right now. Finally, someone has stood up to that man and told him publicly what they think of him, and it's just fan-flipping-tastic. Totally loving it. My reaction was this. And I could go on for 10 minutes, but I'd end up hurting my hands. Such a wonderful contrast to the mealy-mouthed devil's advocacy and ridiculously unfeasible conversations that have been going on recently. Witness Usha and Alan. I mean, who can defend the man? No one can. No one should be. End of period. So, Emma, sisters are doing it for themselves. Totally loving you. That's it. Cheers now. Bye.
Cheerleading for Emma. Was there anybody in the country that did not go woohoo when Emma let rip?
No.
There was nothing negative on the Twitters that I could see anywhere. It was just people going, thank God someone said it.
To be fair, the Twitters isn't the UK. But yes, I think fundamentally you're correct. Nobody on planet Earth, let alone the UK or even Middle England, had anything but other than a positive thumbs upiness for that tirade.
I think we were all thinking to a certain extent, you know, at what point is someone going to say to Rob, you know, we all hate you now, don't you? Because he seemed blissfully unaware, strolling around, you know, oh, Emma, will you do me a favour? You know. Jazza didn't say anything. He just went, all right, okay, I'll leave you to it, and just kept leaving all the time. Every time Rob appeared, Jazza sort of disappeared off. You know, and I was thinking, is anyone going to actually, I mean, what happens when he turns up at the pub? What happens when he goes to the cricket? You know, is anyone actually going to say to him, you know, you are not welcome here? And Emma just did it. She just absolutely laid into him. And I thought he was such a shit to try and... entirely predictably, to try and get her to go and give cards to to
I
Henry.
Thought,
was outrageous.
No, it was, but I thought it was a great scene and really well played.
Yeah,
because she did have a slight wobble. She did think,
yeah,
oh,
she felt awkward.
Yeah, she felt incredibly awkward.
She felt sorry for poor little Henry.
Yeah, and then Rob didn't even realise that she had a slight emotional wobble because, you know, he is this sociopath and he's not at all empathetic and he just went completely over the top. And to rip the thing up,
it just shows what a sulky little Burke he is, doesn't it? Just
absolutely. Absolutely.
Child.
But yes, I just loved that whole episode. And I think it was great that it was Emma who's the first person actually to stand up to Rob. Absolutely stand up and say no.
Yeah.
And then, I know I've made a real habit of doing this the last few shows, but, you know, I don't know if you've actually heard Sunday's episode, but we do get the cricket scene. We do get that. So, excellent. And that is just...
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Yep. Hurrah!
Yep. Suffice to say, pitchforks, cricket bats, cricket stumps all been wielded and, yes, he's been drummed out of at least the social part of the village.
With a spoon!
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. I had promised myself no mention of Rob this week, but oh, how sweet it was to listen to Friday's episode. My sometimes not favorite characters, Emma and Jazzer, stepped up to the plate and delivered. Emma was the real star, and I guess Jazzer and the men of the village listened to my admonition last week. They backed up their better halves and finally directly confronted Rob. Will it be enough for Rob to slink away for good? I'm not sure. Okay, main topic today, in follow-up to Lucy and Royfield's interesting conversation last week. Ian. Specifically, why did Ian appear so much more upset with the information that he already had known for quite some time of Adam's infidelities? Well, denial is a bloody good defense mechanism and helps a person effectively function through some stressful realities. Despite its bad reputation, example, you're in denial, this defense is commonly used in a healthy manner. And I think it has served Ian and the marriage well if Adam were to continue to keep his impulses in check. Unfortunately, Ian's denial was overwhelmed by his public mortification, and he is finally unleashing his long-tamped-down anger at Adam. As the magazine columns ask, can this marriage be saved? I think so, as plenty do survive such crises and improve. Just ask Jenny and Brian. And I'll even go out on a limb and predict that it will. Though I do strongly recommend couples therapy. Why do the residents of Ambridge treat that as being subjected to an alien abduction and probe? In their discussion last week, Lucy and Royfield also touched upon Kirsty. It dawned on me that she had suffered a similar public mortification at the hands of an archer's cousin. So something else ties Ian and Kirsty besides being Helen's two besties. As we know, Kirsty had to leave the land of the archers for a good while and has only just forgiven Tom. Will she have advice for Ian? I really wanted to talk about those fair brethren boys, but time is short. Just to say that Rex finally knows what we have known. Toby broke the bro code in a big way and was not mature enough to face up to the consequences. He even lied to Rex about Pip being a predatory female. Shades of Donald Trump. Dumpty Dummers have had excellent Twitter exchanges about all this during this past week. Okay, gotta go and see how our kitchen renovation is progressing. Life in the big city. Talk to you next week.
Yes, rah for Emma and Jazza and David. I love that. Jazza, you could just tell Jazza was itching to have a bash at someone, wasn't he? He's for months. he hasn't exercised any his, you know, his thumping arm for a long time. And if anyone deserved it, it was Titchinob. And I think Jazza was remarkably restrained. Really? For a furious drunk Glaswegian, he was excellent. And Rob's going, get off me! And he said, you can't do this to me. We can, pal, because we're stronger than you. And it was just great. I love pal. If I could do it, if I could do that accent and do pal, I would. It'd be great.
I think, you know, we talked about Bert being a proxy for just remembering that there's a wider village.
Yes.
And him being this kind of filler character who his storylines don't, he doesn't really have any storylines per se. Actually, Jazza is also a Bert, isn't he?
Yeah.
That he's there to show the village in inverted commas because, you know, he in and of himself isn't actually going to drive any particular storyline. But no, it was absolutely brilliant. And it's actually kind of quite clever for him to have an interaction with Rob kind of earlier on, kind of beforehand. And he you know, he beats a bit of a hasty retreat then and then kind of comes back kind of later.
I thought Kenton was quite interesting in that because Kenton's kind of saying, whoa, mate, whoa, you know, that's my family you're talking about. You can't say that. Mm. When he says, he says to Rob, right, that's enough, because Rob's saying, oh, I'll drink as I hate everybody. I thought it must be hellishly difficult to be a publican in a small village where there's something like that has happened and, you know, it's your family and you don't want to start you have to make sure that you're barring people for the right reasons, not just because you don't happen to like them personally. You know, he was in a very, somebody said on Twitter, well, Jolene would have barred him the second it happened. You know, as soon as the court case came out, she'd have just gone, right, he's never coming back in here again. And Kenton is a bit lily livered in that sort of way, I suppose. But I just thought it was in this sort of the confusion for Kenton over what quite to do with him. All that kind of mate, all right, mate, that's enough. No, that's enough, you know.
I've thought for some time, I don't understand why somebody doesn't kind of just not necessarily lamp him in the middle of, you know, some quiet country lane outside of Ambridge, but at least, you know, give him a bit of the verbals because half the village is related to Helen.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the most that's happened is that Usha's asked him to leave, but she asked him very nicely and she didn't even say, I'm asking you to leave because you're an arsehole. She asked him to leave because she wanted that. She just said, I want my house back.
Mm.
You know, so even then he just sort of was able to say, oh, well, no, this, it's fair enough. She wants her house back. It's fine. It's clearly nothing personal sort of thing.
Mm. The only other thing that's really kind of surprised me about all of this, but I think that though it's been somewhat long overdue, we are getting the reactions that we all thought would have happened some time ago, the reactions from the village, was that Rob managed to keep his frustration and his anger together through the trial. But it's subsequent, is all the things that happen subsequently where it actually he's not been able to cope. And we all thought that under cross-examination by a woman, he wouldn't be able to cope.
Yeah.
You know, so that for me is a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, but he's lost. That's what it is. He's, you know, a child who's a nasty child can pretend to be
But
good.
He doesn't realise that he's lost, though. Because
thinks she's cheated to win.
Exactly. Because he's walking around the village and he has no idea of the reaction that he's going to get and the real feelings that people have for him. He doesn't comprehend that that his wife has got away with, in effect, attempted murder because he was consistently raping and abusing her. He has no comprehension of that.
Yeah. This isn't sustainable for his personality. This is not sustainable. So there will be another dramatic thing. Whether he'll be able to keep a lid on it and then sort of burst like some horrible volcano at Christmas, I don't know.
Well, the rate things seem to be spiraling. You would think it can't even last until Christmas unless he's going to become a hermit somewhere. You know, he's got what, a month to leave Blossom Hill?
Yeah.
So, you know, where is he going?
Yeah.
And you would have thought that he could have gone to number one, the green. But after almost, you know, lamping Emma, Will's not going to put up with that, is it?
No.
So he can't go there. So it is Edgeley, here we come, or Darrington.
But that means Will is going to be working with him, doesn't it?
Well, again, the way things are spiralling so fast, you'd think that Justin Elliott is going to have to rescind that job offer.
Yeah.
You know, because for the maybe that job offer was put there for the purposes of giving him a reason to stay around in Ambridge. I know he's got Giddy Jack, but if we put Giddy Jack to one side, because it would made no sense that somebody whose name is going to be as black or as tarnished as Rob's, you'd want him to be your manager of anything in such an enclosed community because of the negative PR.
Yes, when you've tried to beat up the wife of your main tractor driver and things like that, yes.
Exactly, no. So, yeah. But hey, hum.
Anyway, Witherspoon says, why does everybody in Ambridge think that couples therapy is like an alien probe? Which I thought was very good. Yeah, I know. Well, but it's that kind of, you know, I suppose just because Adam's gay, we shouldn't assume that he's like, as New York Nigel says later on, just because Adam's gay, we shouldn't assume that he's any more sensitive or, you know, in touch with him, with emotions than anyone else, really. Yeah, I mean, if they all react with therapy, they all react with fear as if it's terrible. But he made a very good point about Ian and Kirsty are actually now in the same boat. They've both been sort of betrayed by an archer. They've both had public humiliations. But we never seem to see them in the same scene, I suppose because they serve different purposes for Helen. So they're never together, are they?
Very true.
They'd be unstoppable, those two. They'd be great. Like Batman and Robin. Fantastic. Claire from Clapham now.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. What a brilliant week in Ambridge. A complete return to some real classic Ambridge stuff. I was going to ring in earlier in the week, actually, just to celebrate the brilliance of the scenes with Susan in the shop and talking to Jill about having accidentally won the prize at the show. I just thought that was classic Susan. I love a bit of classic Susan, as you know. She's a character I love to hate. I just think she's so cleverly portrayed. I really enjoyed it. And I did feel a bit bad for Jill because I think just the way she was made to feel like it was all her fault by everyone. And I was glad to see that she was able to kind of make up and laugh about it afterwards. That was good. Really chuffed with how Ed refused to be the token peasant for Alice. And why is Alice turning into some pseudo Kate? I don't get that at all. She's always been the sensible one in the family, and now she's turning into a bit of a, I don't know, privileged. So I'm hoping that Alice reins it back in quite quickly. And then, of course, Emma was great midweek, talking to Helen, making her peace and being really open and honest about how she felt when her mum went to prison. I thought that was really nicely done. Really good touch. So Emma was already in my good books this week before Friday's amazing performance, which I'm sure everyone was cheering. Just fantastic. Not just at the pub, but of course at the cafe as well, where it was just her and Rob, and she just stared him down and said no, and good for her. Absolutely brilliant. And I'm vaguely on the subject of Rob and Bridge Farm. Is he still getting paid sick pay there? Like, no one said that they've like dismissed him or something. Surely they must get around to doing that, especially when he's about to start a job for Justin, although I'm still hoping that's going to fall through. I wish they would tell us that that's officially happened. And why is there still a joint account? Surely Helen will have cleared out as much money as possible somewhere else and not use that account anymore. Close down the joint account, sack Rob, stop paying him sick pay, especially now he's not looking after Henry. They've got no right, they've no reason to give him any money at all. Well done, everyone, and especially well done, Emma. Extra medal for you, I hope. And I'm hoping to see Emma Grandier, some kind of CBE, come the New Year's honours.
You are right, Claire. Classic Ambridge this week. Chutney mix up, where, you know, chutney mix up, a punch up in the bull, the Borsetshire Echo getting things wrong. Yes, fabulous. Ace. Yes, I don't know. There's a lot of loose ends about Robert Bridge Farm. Like, as you said, is he still getting sick pay? He can't be. Why is there still a joint account? I think my understanding is, and I'm not sure if this is right or not, but when there's a criminal case like that, then the assets get frozen, the accounts get frozen. But I don't know when they get unfrozen or what's left. I mean, I wouldn't imagine, actually, that Rob gave Helen any access to any money, because if he wouldn't even let her drive, he's certainly not going to give her a card and a PIN and everything else. He's going to take over the control of the accounts, isn't he?
You'd have thought so.
I can't really see him going, here you are, darling. Unless he like gives a housekeeping. Anyway.
That was a good laugh. Well done.
Ah, talking of good laughs, we've got bye-bye Steve now.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Steve here. I hope you're all well. I've really enjoyed this week. Brilliant. The writing has been so good. And what's been good about it is that there's been lots of storylines, lots of characters. It's just been fantastic. A few things. Isn't Rex wet? He's just awful. He's the bloke, the sad bloke, who, with every woman he wants to have a relationship with, they say to him, I like you as a friend. You know, I don't want to go out with you, but I like you as a friend. You should feel sorry for him, but, you know, give me Toby any day. At least he's got a bit of gumption and a bit of fun about him. Alice, oh, God, she's awful. Where do I start with bloody Alice? Where do I start with Alice and Kate, to be honest? I mean, Kate's as flaky as a leper with eczema, and Alice is just a awful, awful snob. She's vile. But I really enjoyed that sort of scene with her and Ed. Now, on Friday's episode was fantastic. It was just great. And I'm just wondering where Rob's going to go from here. You know, Rob's either going to be run out of town, or he's going to go totally, totally mad and do something stupid. I think now they're going to incorporate the storyline quite well, because this week's been very bitty. You've had a lot of characters in, but we've still got the Rob and Helen thing in the background, so it's been a great week on The Archers, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Have a nice week. I love you all. You know I do. Want to give a big hug around you all and go, mwah. Anyway, bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Mwah. Bye-bye, bye-bye.
He also says, a classic Ambridge week, Rex is wet. But he can't go around bashing Toby in the face. Basically, you know, they both fancied the same woman. One of them got her and the other one didn't. That's it, really, isn't it? I mean, he can't.
No, it's not just that. It's the fact that his confidence was completely and utterly betrayed and his feelings trampled on. It's not just, oh, the best man got her, so to speak.
My God, I'm not saying the best man won. But by the way, have you changed your opinion on our bet, which we never made for
no, for think thing? About exactly what the bet was. The bet was that, not that it will last, but that Toby has genuine feelings for Pip.
So
and
when
yes,
he
does. He is. He's got. He needs to develop a bit of a backbone, and he shouldn't have said what he said, and he said it to get out of a tight spot. But does he have genuine feelings for her? Absolutely. He has.
Is that what you'd say about someone you had?
Listen, I didn't say he was a nice guy. I didn't say he was a nice guy, Lucy.
I think we need to establish what genuine feelings. I mean, feeling cold is a genuine feeling, but it doesn't, you know, there's no nobility.
Yeah,
in
but in terms of somebody says genuine feeling towards a fellow human being, it's warm feelings. Come on. So, is he a nice guy? Didn't say that he was. Is he a bit of a shit? Absolutely agree. But he has publicly declared his affection for Pip, and publicly is snogging her all over the place. In terms of Toby, he has real, genuine, warm affection for that archer. Will it last? I don't know. I won the bet, and I'm still winning the bet. Word.
All right. Being as you've managed to keep me entertained all afternoon between you and the AA and the RAC, while somebody's sitting in a lay-by off Kidderminster wondering where the hell all the drivers are, I'll forgive you.
Is that an opportune time for us to mention the nonsense that's gone on?
Yes, go on then.
Well, Laura HT found herself in a Sainsbury's car park. I don't know if it's in Kidderminster, but a Sainsbury's car park in the United Kingdom somewhere, all broken down with her hubby, and only had Dumpty Dum to keep her company until a rescue man kind of came out to kind of get her all sorted.
Oh, you poor thing.
No, but
bad enough.
Anyway, suffice to say that the AA help, because I said, oh, is the AA man on his way, kind of pinged up and said, hi. So I decided to have a little bit of fun this afternoon between the AA, Green Flag, and the RAC, and basically just say, well, which service is the best? Now, Lucy, very unscientific, I asked questions like, how many patrolmen do you have? Which has the nicest telephone operators? And then the clincher was...
Things a bit slack at Royfield. In Royfield land this afternoon, if you had time to do this.
Lucy, it's all part of our social media strategy.
Amazing. How long have we had a strategy?
Well, since the start of this whole kit and caboodle,
I thought
Lucy.
We just did stuff and then afterwards said, well, that's quite good. Let's do more of that stuff.
Well, that's really how this strategy developed. Okay. I was just doing stuff. And then one thing led on to another. But the clinching question was, name a character from The Archers. And the AA, who answered every tweet the fastest, said Kenton, ? So they
only knew one person, why would you know Kenton?
Well, I reckon they probably just Googled it. But yeah, it doesn't really matter. They answered the quickest. Then Green Flag said Peggy. Still waiting for the RAC. Now, if that's any kind of metaphor onto the speed of their service, folks, don't use the RAC. It's the AA all the way. From here on in, the Dum-de-Dum Road Rescue Service, which we can endorse for 2016.
It's the Archers, so it's the Archers Automobile Association.
I like that. Holy cow, you're a clever woman.
Ring them up, see if they'll sponsor us.
Well, they've got a bobble too, haven't they?
They have.
Ooh, okay.
I pay them enough.
Well, and as I say, dum-de-dum listener, if you're in the UK and you're thinking, oh, I need some roadside recovery service breakdown cover, the Archers Automobile Association is the one for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Next call.
Deb's from Germany. Highly irritated by sanctimonious Adam. Well, he is living in a box of crisps. I mean, you have to forgive him, really. But he, I don't think he's being that sanctimonious. He's just being a martyr. He's just sitting there going, oh, no, it's all right, I don't mind. Quite like living in the crisps. You know, I deserve it, I'm shit. No, his lovely family isn't helping at all. They're all saying, you stupid boy, what did you do that for? Which isn't helping at all. Even Brian, ironically. I don't think he's being sanctimonious. I think, yeah, he's just given up slightly too easily, really, because he can't really see how to get things back because he's just a bit inept. I think inept rather than sanctimonious.
Mm. He's always been by far the one with the least amount of emotional intelligence when it comes to him and Ian. And yeah, he's playing his character in spades here, that, you know, he's warring a bit of self-pity. You know, well, me, I'd be round there to Ian. I'd be round there, you know, saying what needs to be said, box chocolates, bunch of flowers, whatever.
Yeah.
Him doing quizzes with Joe and whoever the heck it was. You know, he's not helping him get back with his husband now, is it?
Well, he's like a dog who's pooed in the corner, you know, he's just sort of slinking around, trying not to look at it, isn't he? Go, I'm sorry, you know, and he just needs to, yes, go and front it out. I mean, everyone knows, there's no point hiding. Everyone knows exactly what he did and with whom and when.
It's interesting, number one, that he used that expression to front it out. That's the Walthamstow in you coming out, isn't it?
But in it do, yeah.
Yeah, but apart from that, do you believe, you know, anything like this, you just confront the issue straight up?
No, I think it's depending what you're... I think human nature is to just pretend it didn't happen and to just hide because you feel so guilty and so appalling. But if he's that... If he actually is committed to getting things back on track again, you need, like you said, you need to actually be in the same you know, 100 meters of the person you're trying to talk to, rather than just kind of giving up very, very quickly. And that's what it seems to me that he's done.
I don't think necessarily that he's given up, but it's just his lack of action is somewhat puzzling, considering he is he's truly cut up. And we haven't had any talk.
But, you know, is he ever thinking, I was right, I should have stayed with Charlie, this was never,
well,
you know,
that's
this
where,
was never
that's
meant
where,
to be.
That's where I was about to go with this. Because we haven't had any talk, not even a slight aside, of Charlie Boy. So I'm guessing that right here and now, he's genuinely, genuinely cut up. However, yeah, he's a bit of a Burke, and he should be round there to at least apologise to his hubby and to show massive dollops of contrition, and he's not. Yeah.
He is backed in like a massive dollop, in fact. Mm-hmm. Vicky Cole in Kenya.
Woohoo, we go.
Hi, Dumpty Dum, Lucy, Royfield, everybody. Vicky Cole in Kenya here. I haven't called in for a while. I've just been so irritated by the Archers lately. Ever since that ridiculous jury episode, well, I have a list of things that have been irritating me. Alan and Usha's conversation. He says he's had to deal with pastoral support of the whole village. Really? Would people really be going to Alan? Adam and Ian. Ian's known all the problems for a long time. Why now? Why is Adam now in the bull among the barstools and the crisp packets? It's stupid. And Alice, what's happened to her? She's turned into a braying party idiot. She didn't used to be, and she's being so complacent about everything, so I think that's setting up for an affair. But it can't be Chris, because he's disappeared, so it'll have to be her. Ugh. The flour and produce was no light relief. I mean, the ridiculous jam and chutney thing with Jill and Carol. Oh, I don't care. Oh, Pip and Toby, well, words fail me. I just hope Pip will dump him now she realises how he treated Rex. It's just boring and horrible and irritating. Oliver and the Grundys, it's just unrealistic. Why did David suddenly give Josh £400? I mean, it's just all so stupid. We've been having a bit of a tough time at the moment, and I really didn't want to be brought to the point where I'd contemplate giving up on the Archers. I'm such an addict. But I would never give up on Dumpty Dum. I mean, I have to say thank you. Your shows have been a little ray of sunshine and always make me smile, and I really thank you for that. And then Friday's episode. I've just listened to it again, and I forgive them everything. I mean, that was just brilliant. Hurrah for Emma. I think she's quite lucky David and Jazza were there to weigh in. Not sure where Kenton was, but anyway. And I just hope she will be safe from Rob, but really now this is the beginning of Rob getting his comeuppance. So thank you, Archers. That's better. Bye. Bye.
Oh, Vicky, I'm very sorry you're having a tough time. And I tried to find contact details for you today because I was going to get in touch and see if you were okay. But I couldn't find them. That's helpful. But yes, the chutney thing was quite cheering, I felt. She says, why is Ian being like this now? I think it is everything we said before. I think it is he's been exposed in a really, really embarrassing, mortifying way. It's a bit like Witherspoon said as well, that, you know, he's been let down publicly by an Archer, again, who operate like the mafia and kind of, you know, own the village, that you can't take more than a step. It's, you know, without bumping into somebody that's related to the family. It's this huge sort of network, and you've been publicly rejected by them. And that's, you know, that's hideous. It's the public side of it. And New York Nigel has something very interesting to say about that. So let's do that now.
Everyone, it's New York Nigel here, thinking of you all in a wet and windy autumnal city here. Three little things. Given the fact that I'm a gay vicar, two of the topics probably a bit predictable. Anyway, firstly, why should either Alan or Usher know more about the horror of Rob's abuse than anyone else? Maybe Usha, it's her house and the place where she lived herself, so she's going to feel a bit more touched by what happened there than her husband was. But Alan's only the vicar. He's not clairvoyant. It's sort of touching that everyone seems to think that he's going to know more about what happened there than anyone else. But vicars know only what they're told, frankly. Helen wasn't a churchgoer, and neither was Rob. Why would the vicar know more than anyone else in that case? I think it says a lot about England and the Church of England that the staff of the Bull know more about Rob than the vicar does. And what is Alan's role in the vicarage, after all? As a vicar myself, I'm tired of him being dragged out for a dunking once a year and then not really having much of a story of his own. And number two, about the Adam and Ian story. Why should Ian always be a sort of sensitive gay person who understands counselling? Well, you know, we probably all thought better of him because the scriptwriters until now have portrayed him as a sensitive guy and sort of understanding about anything, the voice of reason. So his reaction to the public exposure of his husband's infidelity, which actually he knew about all along, has taken us by surprise. I'm going out on a limb here, but I think that gay people are more hurt by public exposure of their relationships than straight people might be, especially in a small village like Ambridge, because we still sense the pain of being outed. We're just like any other relationship, and the plot masters of the Archers haven't yet given us the benefit of being normal and a bit boring, actually. We've gone from being invisible chef at Grey Gables to being serial adulters like Brian Aldridge in just a few years. We're just getting used to be represented in the media, let alone being exposed as having relationships that just like anyone else's. I'm sorry for them both, actually, and particularly sorry that the first gay marriage in Ambridge has been slaughtered on the altar of the Helen and Rob story, but that's just par for the course, isn't it? Just got to suck it up. Lastly, I wonder if anybody in the Bull was thinking about Rob's colostomy bag when they were manhandling him out of the bar. Sounded pretty physical to me, not the sort of thing that people dealing with a knifing victim would have done without fear of being sued. Perhaps that's the next horrible permutation of the story. Maybe the bag ruptured in the ruckus. Anyway, love the Archers this week, and I'd be happy with anyone's chutney at this point, whether it was labelled properly or not, and especially with a slice of Lucy's cheese on one of Martha Woodford's Bath Olivers. Bye for now.
New York Nigel, lots of very good points. I wasn't saying that Alan and Usha should know anything more about Rob's abuse than anyone else, but surely they knew about the rape because everybody did, because so many people were in court. It wasn't private, and people would relay that information because it was so shocking as soon as they got back to the village again. There's no way Alan would not know what everyone else was talking about. In addition, one of the people that represented Helen, I believe, was in Usha's solicitor firm. She said, I have to be careful what I've had to avoid Dominic, or I've had to not talk to Dominic, or something like that. So she would definitely know. Yes, I agree. Why should Adam and Ian be sensitive and want to go to counselling when maybe they're just chucking bottles of wine at each other like a straight couple would. I don't know.
I suppose, yeah, and I suppose this is our kind of straight prejudice in the fact that we think that they must be a much more sensitive and empathic kind of couple than us.
Yeah.
So I'll completely hold up my hand to straight privilege and to a straight way of thinking about this. But what I would say, though, is that the way that Ian has been written for the last 15 years, I think he's been in it for about 15 years, is that he was the moral conscience of the village, of the writers. And he was, you know, and Kirsty plays a similar role as well, but she's a little bit more kind of feisty with it, whereas he was always kind of the, you know, wise sage, so to speak. So with that in mind, you do just think, well, he would be the person who would want to talk about things and to go into couples therapy. But he's understandably angry. It might have come a little bit late, but he is angry. And as you said, it was the public shaming that has kind of pushed him to this. And he's wallowing in his anger. And it's understandable for him to wallow in it for a little while longer, I suppose.
In Ray the colostomy bag, something that I had to have a chat with my friend Phil about this morning, and I said, what if you have a colostomy bag, why would Rob even be going to the loo if he had a colostomy bag? And Phil said maybe he was emptying it, which was a bit disturbing.
Well,
but I don't know enough about them, thank goodness. I'm tapping wood here that I don't know enough about them.
You mean that you never get to have to wear one?
No, or have anything that come into close contact with them. But yes, well, maybe, yeah, as Newt Nigel says, maybe that is going to be the beginning of Rob's demise. He gets an infected colostomy back through Jazza and David beating him up. They didn't beat him up there, did they? They just sort of strong-armed him out the pub, really. Sadly. Yes, and from colostomy bags to chutney, Amy Gilbert.
Hello, it's a rather fed-up Amy Gilbert here. But I'm very glad to say that the latest Dumpty Dum is making me laugh uproariously. So thank you, Royfield and Lucy. Lucy in particular. Your monologues are always a treat. Anyway, forget tuna bake and custard. It's all about chutney gate now, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, I think the whole nation rejoiced with Jill, or chorused with Jill, sorry, should I say. Sorry, my brain isn't in the right mind. When she said, Toby! At the end of Sunday night's episode, I think we were all wanting to do that. And I'd had quite enough of Pip and Toby making out, as she put it. So I really hope that Pip and Toby end again very soon, because, quite frankly, I've had enough of them. But anyway, back to the chutney. I don't know what else to say about chutney. I don't like it, personally. I think it's disgusting. Anyway, I'm going to leave you now and carry on sipping my Lemsip and enjoying the greatness that is Dumpty Dum. Anyway, bye-bye!
Yes, I also like... She said she liked Jill going, Toby! Yes. What was... I did actually feel slightly sorry for Toby, because it was... I mean, Rex could very easily have made that mistake. Anybody. Pip could have very easily made that mistake. It was quite interesting the way Pip leapt to Toby's defence and pretended it was her that had put the chutney in the wrong place and muddled it up with Carol Toboggans and all that. I thought I can see that. You'll say that I'm just paranoid about it, but I could see that kind of the exactly what you didn't want to happen with Pip happening, i.e. the slight appropriation of, you know, of Toby, of wanting to be overly protective of him and putting him in a good light, rather than just, because with someone like Toby, they're so kind of amoral, you just have to kind of leave them alone. You can't start taking sides, because that's only going to end badly for you, because you don't know what rules they're playing by. You can just be there and say, yeah, well, you know, he does what he wants and that's fine by me. But you don't start kind of, you know, making excuses for him and trying to create a moral framework for him that he doesn't have.
I slightly disagree with you there. And I think because we're talking about the same programme that has a character like Rob Titchener, we've got to be careful calling Toby amoral. What Toby is a corner cutter. And he wants the path of least resistance for anything.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, okay. He actually does have a moral compass, but, you know, it's not writ large on his sleeve. But, yeah, I kind of agree with what you're saying, but we just have to be slightly careful here. He's not a sociopath, but what he is a little bit of a chancer and a little bit of a wide boy. Next call.
Hello. My name's Annalisa Cosma. I live in Port Perry, Ontario. I'm a first-time caller in era. I've been listening to Dumpty Dum for a few months, and I love it so much. My husband groans when he hears the Archers theme tune, but he actually doesn't mind Dumpty Dum, especially when we're driving up to the cottage. Though the first time he said he was amazed that the storylines were so racy. I think that was the condom machine in the bull episode. Also the one where he asked what the heck is Elf World? I've been listening to the Archers on and off since Lizzie worked at the Borchester Echo, and I was working on a local paper myself. And I remember the wonderful Mrs. Antropus and her girls, but the first character I remember actually entering the village is Ruth. So I suppose that makes me a Ruth, although I'd rather be a Mrs. Antropus. What I really wanted to say this time, though, was how much I just loved hearing Helen rejoice in the simple, everyday details of being at home at Bridge Farm, how she exclaimed over the cups and the saucers and the post and the bits of baler twine. And it reminded me of what I really love, I think, most about the Archers, the way it celebrates everyday life and how reassuring that is. And I adore mentions of the flowers that are coming up, especially being so far away from England now. And my ears perked up the other week when Royfield and Lucy, you talked about the Snowdrop Festival. And, you know, I would come for that. Anyway, I'll try and call again soon. Love your podcast and love all the people who call in from around the world.
Annalisa Cosma in Ontario. I'm very glad your husband doesn't mind Dumpty Dum, but please reassure him that the storylines on The Archers are not as racy as we make them sound.
Can I just say before you launch in to your kind of dissection of a wondrous call, if you, dear listener, are a listener of Dumpty Dum, but you don't listen to The Archers, please tweet, email or call in next week, because I actually know that this is not such a rare phenomenon, and I know that lots of people have partners that listen to The Archers kind of vicariously, but actually do devour a little bit of Dumpty Dum. But if you are actually somebody who says, you know what, I just like this, but I actually don't listen to The Archers, just let us know, because I'd just like to quite know. That'd be cool. Right. Over to you. Back to your answer on her question on her call. Here you go.
She wants to come to the Snowdrop Festival. So whoever did the Snowdrop Festival, I can't remember who it was. No, that's gone. I've now got to the overwrite stage of my brain where every new thing, it just replaced.
I've got a Christine on the mind. It was a Christine.
Yeah, so have I. Yeah.
Christine from Shaftesbury.
Christine something. Anyway, yes, then get in touch because Annalisa Cosmo from Ontario wants to come to your Snowdrop Festival. Yes, you're the same vintage as me then, Elizabeth Ruth joining the village. Yep. Which probably makes us an, oh, no. Anyway, Helen, she says she loves hearing Helen reveling in the joy of the everyday. Yes, it is lovely. I could have done without the stupid singing in the car with her and Kirsty. Why do they always think that women have to sing? Girls just want to have fun. That was 30 years ago. We're not still singing it. Crying out loud. Anyway, that was quite irritating, but it is very nice to just hear her getting on with stuff, just doing things, driving and, you know, sort of just lifting her head up and being able to just have a life again. Just lovely, really, really nice. And yeah, excellent.
Awesome.
Paul Room.
Hello, you two. I just wanted to say that I agree with Cosmo. I think that Kirsty is pregnant because the week before last in the scene, where she was talking with Helen, cooing over baby Jack. And Helen said that Kirsty was talking about Jack as if he was a dog, saying he was a clever boy then. Kirsty said, I've got a lot to learn with babies. And that raised immediate alarm bells that Kirsty is pregnant, or it's a complete red herring put in by the scriptwriters. And that's the sort of thing I like with the Archers, when these little throwaway lines are put in and make you think, what's going on there? The other thing on Friday's episode, when Jazza and David threw Rob out of the pub after the confrontation with Emma, there was so much snorting and bellowing going on that I thought that Otto was reincarnated and had just come out of the gents after buying a pack of three if Toby had left any in the machine. It was the most amazing noises going on there. Very enjoyable.
Kirsty is not pregnant. Not. Or if she did, she doesn't know she is. So all that. Oh, I've got a lot to learn about babies. No. I did like the comment about Otto being loose, all the grunting. David and Jazz are trying to heave Rob over the threshold. Yes, she's not pregnant, is she, Royf? Reassure me that she's not pregnant.
I don't know. And it's in the lap of the gods, the script writing gods, because you could say that Mr. Room is reading too much into every line. And I'd say that some 80 to 85% of every line in The Archers is written with some true meaning. But however, this could go one or two ways, and I have no bloody idea. However, as I said last week, in terms of the plotting of the whole thing, it would make a whole load of sense, because we need tension and we need a reason for Tom and Kirsty to come back together a third time. And this would be, you know, the deal clincher, wouldn't it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes sense from a long-term kind of plotting view, point of view. However, you told me quite masterfully, and somebody else did also on the Twitters, that a sensible modern woman like her wouldn't be caught short in the contraceptive department. So, you know, I don't know, Lucy. All I do is I co-host and produce this podcast. I have no idea.
Auntie Jean! Jean, Jean, let yourself
go! Hello, Auntie Jean here. First of all, I'd like to say a very, very big thank you to all those people that signed the petition. As some of you know, my husband has a rare form of lymphoma, and the government are trying to stop funding stem cell transplants in order to fund other drugs with other diseases. We've set up a petition. If anybody hasn't signed, we've got to 10,000, but we've got to try and get to 100,000. So if you could sign, that would be great. It's www.leukemiacare.org.uk/news/cancer-lottery. Thank you. Now, on to the Archers, which is much more important, obviously. I'm having a Shit of the Week award from now on. Josh had it the other week. This week is going to Toby Fairbrother for obvious reasons, closely followed by Alice. Rob is out of the running because he's worse than Shit of the Week, so he's not qualified. Toby not telling Rex what's going on, and Rex finding out at the party. Honest to God, the man's an idiot. Don't see what Pip sees in him, but there we are. As for the showdown in the ball, well, that was absolutely brilliant. Enjoyed every minute of it. And what's Rob going to do? The thing is he going to spiral out of control a bit when he realises that nobody likes him and he's not welcome in the village? We'll have to wait and see. Anyway, Roy Field, 1 minute 30 seconds. Bye!
Yes, if you haven't signed Auntie Jean's petition, sign it now or she will come to your house and beat you up. She's instigated Shit of the Week, which at the moment is Toby Fairbrother. It was Toby not telling Rex what was going. It was just he's such a coward.
To be fair to the guy, right?
I mean, it's not a nice thing to have to say.
No. And the thing that really tripped him up was the fact that his brother arrives one day and then there's a village get together the day after.
Yeah.
So he really should have just, you know, just like spoken to his. Which one's the older brother? I presume Rex must be the older brother because he's more sensible.
Yeah.
You know, he should have just turned around to
his older... I think Toby's the older one.
You know, I think so too, but normally is the older brother's the one that's slightly more conservative, the older sibling, sorry. But anyway, whoever.
No, I think it's not.
However, I think that's really what tripped him up. Though, whether he was caught snogging Pip or not, very obviously, that is going to be news of the village, news of the party, and somebody would turn around to Rex at some point and says, what do you reckon to? So actually, the scene of him seeing his brother was actually not needed.
No.
And it would have been better, you know, it would be a better dramatic plot device would have just been somebody turning around and saying, oh, what do you reckon, blah, 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 and him going, what? Him just losing it in and of that moment. And then turning around to Toby, and when Toby has no idea that he knows, and just, you know, letting him have it verbally would have been much stronger. But hey,
I really didn't like Pip's behavior when Rex came back and he said to Toby, so where were you last night, why didn't you come and say hello to me? And Pip said, yeah, where were you, Toby? And I thought, now that's mean, because that is, in retrospect, he's gonna know that you're teasing him without him, you're teasing,
but you know what's not knowing. What's not being outlined for a fact is that Pip knows that Rex had a thing for her. We don't know for a fact that she does. You know, you might say, well, it was incredibly obvious. But for a start off, Toby's not turned around and says, my brother's had a thing for you for months, but I just dived in. He's not.
No, but Alice told her, didn't she?
Yeah, but just because Alice said,
yeah,
doesn't mean that Pip took it completely on. Because Pip at that point said, no, he doesn't. And she was, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You know, like a bunch of teenagers.
No, it's starting to sound like Ricky Pollard. No, right, because like Alice said to him that he liked her, and I said, no, he didn't. And then he said, yes, he did. And then anyway, they caught a snogging, and that's why.
But you know what, though? I thought that's very good. But it was Alice's opinion. Alice didn't present it as fact, i.e. Rex told me. She just says, by the look of him and the way he has puppy dog eyes around you, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's true. Goddess Diva.
Hey, Dumpty Dance, Goddess Diva here, wishing to give massive props and kudos to Emma Grundy. In the blue corner, it's Rob, you sad, pathetic bully. And in the other corner, it's Emma, warrior, fecking queen. Oh, my days. So lovely to hear all the way through that episode, that omnibus Emma's just given him what for. And me being a feminist, and I'm obviously going to have to point this out, that anybody who thinks Jazza was the hero of the hour needs to remember that he was just making polite small talk when Rob turned up at the farm, and it was Emma who gave him what for, even when he turned up to the shop. So, yay, Emma. Go, Emma. It's your birthday. We're going to party like it's your birthday. Very chuffed. Okay, I'm off to watch Luke Cage now. Apparently it's quite good. And speak to you all soon. Bye.
We only need to say four words after Goddess Diva's call. Emma Grundy, warrior princess.
Is this an opportune time to hit our listeners with some news about the person that plays Emma Grundy?
Yes.
Go on then.
Just want me to. Yeah. Next week, Emerald O'Hanrahan, who plays Emma Grundy, warrior princess, will be coming on the show.
Woohoo!
She doesn't listen. She hasn't got a clue what we are, but she's a very nice woman, and she is delighting herself in being the new Boudica of Borsetshire. So she'll be on the show, so that will be out next Tuesday. Hoorah!
Is this Boudica the second then?
Yes.
Because Jennifer's Boudica the first.
Yes. I think she's been deposed. As all Jennifer does is tiddle around with the website now. She doesn't do anything, does she? And she wouldn't stand up to Titchy Knob. She wouldn't say anything. She'd just go, oh, dear. Well, I don't think that's, yes.
I don't know. Jennifer has a little bit of steel in her spine. When you back her completely into a corner, she does. She's not completely utterly a wet rag. But anyway. So
well, she hasn't even spoken to Justin yet about the inadvisability of hiring Rob. She's spoken to everyone else except Justin.
Good point. But before I forget, folks, if you have a question you'd like to pop along to old Emerald, why don't you speak pipe it to us or email it in, and we'll make sure that your question gets posed.
G'day, this is Millie Bell, just phoning in as a caller in, because this is not part of my roundup. These are just my personal thoughts. One thing I just wanted to say was when Josh asked his dad for some money for having done such a good deal on the lawnmower thing, I was really, really cross, because I thought that David would say, yep, no worries, we're going to give you $400. By the way, you're going to start paying board and lodging. And he just rolled over. And I just thought that was appalling and actually not very good parenting. So that was one thing. And then the other thing that occurred to me during the week was twice recently, Alice has said that neither Chris nor she would have an affair. So I just want to say, I think one of them is going to have an affair. Keep up the good work. Hooroo.
Millie Bell has called in, not as social media gatherer extraordinaire, but as herself. She says that David just rolled over and gave Josh the money for that mower. He didn't say at any point, right, Mush, you're asking me for 400 quid. What exactly do you think you owe me for the amount of boarding lodging that you're taking from me as your gap year?
When I first heard that, I thought that's a very good point. And it's not at all a bad point, but we don't know what the financial arrangement is with him doing work on the farm anyway. We don't know. It could be that it's offset against board and lodging. We just don't know. However, you have a point. You have a point, but we don't know the whole
thing. But he doesn't really do work on the farm, does he? He just does his chickens, that's all.
Is that true? Has he not kind of...
Every now and again he goes out and tiddles around with the cows or whatever.
That's what I thought, but...
Right.
Cosmo... Mr. Detail.
Help! Yokel Bear now. Well, I got a brand new combine
harvester and I'll give you the key. Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Yokel Bear here calling from the rolling hills of Yokelshire. I don't like Alice. There, I've said it. I don't like Pip either, but I actually prefer Pip to Alice. And it all came to a bit of a head for me this week. And I think you know what I'm talking about. Yokelgate. Yes. Alice was just so awful in that kind of, come along, Ed, I want people to meet you. Like he was some kind of slack-jawed yokel, some kind of fairground exhibit to be shown off. I just thought it was awful. And as you know, I'm kind of, I think class is a thing in the Archers. And that was all about the kind of, look, there's the poor people tilling the land whilst we do all the kind of high-tech stuff and everything. You know, that whole management speak, end user, I almost threw up. But to be honest with you, do you know what, Alice? You can just stick it up your agribusiness as far as I'm concerned. I think it was just rude. It was awful. And she probably doesn't even realise it. She thinks that, you know, because she seems quite self-centred as a character, to say the least. Wasn't impressed by that. But I did have a moment of the week. And funnily enough, my moment of the week wasn't actually on the Archers. It was straight after the Archers. The Omnibus on Sunday. So we've got the big kind of confrontation between Emma and Jazza and Adam and Rob. But the continuity announcer afterwards said, blimey, that blew the froth off of Bert Fry's pint. And that made me roar with laughter. Bravo, continuity announcer. That was just superb.
It's hardly news that you don't like Alice Yokelbert. But yes. Continuity, I am loving them at the minute. I think they are so relieved that they don't have to end every episode with going, because we ended on a Rob scene, you know, or they've had to do the, if you've been affected by show, maybe issues in the show, da 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 da. That they're now, when he ended that, the Emma and Rob row, when he said, well, that blew the froth off Bert Fry's pint. Just fabulous. They're really, really going for it now. They're like, hurrah, because they've been let off the leash. It's great. Ooh. Sarah Brown.
Golden brown, texture like sun. Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Sarah Brown here. I absolutely loved this week's episodes. I thought there was something quite amazingly dramatic, had a proper trajectory as far as Rob was concerned. I'm kind of, you know, slightly indifferent to the side stories about Alice and Pip and that crowd, but and I don't quite get Alice. I think she's a bit odd. Anyway, there you go. I wouldn't have wanted one of my sons to bring her home, let's put it that way. Anyway, and as for Pip, well, you know, good for her in a way, I suppose. I don't know. Look, the business about Rob, I listened to it every day last week and I thought, gosh, I feel that the village knows him differently at the end of the week than the way they did at the beginning, and more so than in the trial. What I really enjoyed was somebody early on in the week when he first saw the baby, when he first saw Mizen Jack Gideon, that actually one almost felt tiny little weeny bit sorry for him, tiniest bit sorry for him. And by the end of the week, we knew that other people now saw him in his true colours. Good for Emma, good for Jazza, good old Jazza. He's getting to be really one of my favourite characters, him and Jim. I wish we had more of him and Jim together. That would be grand. But there you go. I really liked it, and I listened to it again, and I went for my walk, and I had it on in my ears, and I was walking back thinking, I'd better not do a fist pump because it will look very strange. Anyway, jolly good stuff.
Sarah Brown, I loved the fact that you said, I was listening in my ears. I'm going to call it that. I'm not going to say I've got headphones on. I'm going to say, I am listening in my ears. Yes, Alice is a bit odd. I agree. And it was absolutely right. It was a fabulous trajectory of Rob, because there were a few people who were beginning to countenance, or against their better judgment, feel a strange feeling of sympathy for Rob at the start of the week when he was wrestling with Giddy Jack and was having to ask Tony for help and all that sort of stuff. And then by the end of the week, we all wanted to kill him again. So it was great. It was kind of this lovely little arc by the end of it, you know, him threatening Emma and being vile and swanning around and assuming that he was still, you know, going to be a pillar of the local community and everything. So you sort of go full circle. It was lovely. Really, really lovely. Beautifully done.
No, it was. And I know that numerous listeners have said this, but I think this is an absolute vintage week. Absolute vintage week.
Many people have said that this week, haven't they?
Yep. Just whilst you're trying to collect your thoughts and maybe go on to the next call, people in the West Country, specifically Bristol, Auntie Jean is sorting out a dum-de-dum get-together for Saturday, October the 29th. I suggest you get your bum over onto Twitter, go find her, and you can kind of tweet her and ask her for more details. But right here and now, I think there's some seven Bristolians that are going to that meetup. So it's October the 29th, which is a Saturday, and I believe it's going to happen early evening. And she's kind of canvassing people as to where exactly they want to meet for drinks and I think maybe have something to eat. But it's Auntie Jean, which is Jean R61. So that's JEANR61 on the Twitters. And go and get yourself there if you can.
We now have Naked Fingers, who has the nicest voice in the world. And if he's not in radio, he should be, quite frankly.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. Naked Fingers here, back in Blighty and just about recovered from my jet lag, but still reeling from having my dulcet tones compared to those of Mr. Titchy Knob. Thanks, Lucy. I'm calling in with a bit of a plot prediction. Regards Toby and Pip and Rex. I think Rex is going to spill the beans about what's been going on in Brighton. Not immediately, but, you know, the pent-up sexual frustration and anger at his brother. He doesn't have sexual frustration at his brother. I certainly hope not. Although that would make an interesting plot. Is going to burst forth in a massive ejaculation of spite and bile. And he is going to let it slip to Pip what has been going on in Brighton, and we will all find out, and the manure will hit the combine harvester blades, and all hell will break loose.
I know, I'm sorry that you sound like Titchy Knob, but you do, and when you said, I am still reeling, you sounded exactly like him. So there we go. If you don't want me to say that you don't sound like him, stop sounding like him. He reckons Rex is going to fess up about what happens in Brighton as a way of putting Pip off. I had completely forgotten about Brighton. I think that is a very good call.
Excellent call indeed, sir.
Yep. Hurrah. Right. John the First.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's John the First here. I haven't caller-innered since the verdict, and like everybody, I'm absolutely delighted, but a little bit nervous about what the future holds for Helen. But anyway, what I want to talk about this week is hints and subliminal messages that are being dropped by the scriptwriters for future storylines, although they're actually not that subliminal. I think the two blatant ones that are being hinted at right now are, first of all, Alice. I think she's going to have an affair with this new boss of hers that she seems to be so enamoured with, literally, possibly. I just think the way that she keeps going on about, oh, well, that would never happen to me. Chris would never do that to me. I'd never do that. It just smacks of you're going to have an affair, doesn't it? And the final one, the other one that is really sticking out for me, unfortunately, is Joe. I think the fact that he keeps saying he's going to go on forever and he could live out the rest of his days and he could go on for years and years and years blatantly means he's not going to. And I have a nasty feeling that could be a Christmas storyline. Either that or some sort of explosive conclusion to the Rob storyline. But we'll see. Anyway, nice and short this week, but loving the podcast as ever. Speak to you soon. Bye for now.
Alice cannot be chirping on so annoyingly about infidelity and how her and Chris would never do that to each other without one of them doing it to each other.
Absolutely.
So he reckons, John the First reckons it's Alice's new boss, who she does keep seeing to be sort of hero worshipping a little bit at the moment, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And also Chris appears to have spontaneously combusted behind his own apron. So, you know, who knows? Maybe that's it. But you can't, they can't, unless this is a red herring the size of Moby Dick, they can't have this.
Yeah, because all of a sudden we've had just not even just that whole line from Alice about the whole, oh, being so anti Adam's affair. We just have Alice. She's come out of nowhere. The last thing we heard of her, she
and
was singing
massively unsympathetically as well. Exactly. Everyone was going, oh God, she was so awful.
Absolutely, absolutely. The last we heard of her, she was in the back of the car going to an agricultural show. That was months ago. And then before that, we hadn't heard of her in how many years? So, yeah, they're obviously queuing her up for something.
Yeah.
Hello, Rachel Louise here at Tiny Ray Ray on Twitter. Just wondering whether we should start placing our bets now for when Chris is caught with his trousers down. Blatantly, he's going to cheat on Alice. I think it's going to be the big Christmas / New Year storyline. Any other guesses? Bye.
Tiny Ray Ray agrees Chris will be caught with his trousers down and thinks that's going to be the big Christmas and New Year storyline.
Mm.
Yeah. I hope it is, because I don't want their pinchy knob bust up at Christmas, because that would be horrible.
Yet if you're going back to Ambridge Extra days, when she went off to uni in Southampton, I believe she went, it was her that nearly had that dalliance with that oik down there.
Yeah.
You know, so she has a little bit of form in terms of not being 110% kind of faithful. Yeah. And it was Chris that came down and was strong but firm but somewhat kind of understanding, and she thanked him for saving their marriage.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that there is no Chris says to me that actually it's going to be Alice.
And also it's always the people that are most, you know, it's like it's always the politicians that are most vehemently anti-gay turn out to be, you know, rogering everything that moves in their spare time and all that sort of thing. So it's people that are vehemently anti you know what I'm trying to say, because I don't. People that make the most noise about a certain issue are normally because it's something that they recognise in themselves and don't like.
Hmm. So are you saying that really I'm pro-Brexit?
Yes. And your mum is Remain. Yes, that's what's happening. Jan Mitchell has discovered a secret relative.
Oh, Canada, our own native land.
Hello, Royfield, Lucy, Millie Bell, and Harriet, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Jan from Cannes calling, and I have really good news. I was chatting on the phone with my cousin the other day, and I haven't heard from her in a long time. And I shared with her my love of the Archers. And lo and behold, I discover that my cousin Jean has been listening to the Archers faithfully for many years. So we were both like beside ourselves with happiness. She is one province over, so she's in the Alberta Prairies. So we won't see each other very often, but we do have the phone. So I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of Sunday evening chats in the future. I told her about Dumpty Dum, and that got her equally excited. So keep your eyes open for Jean. She spells her name J-E-I-N, and she's from Alberta, and she's my cousin. So hopefully she'll download your show and even give you a good review on iTunes. Okay, well, that's it for me, my good news. And again, thank you to Royfield for putting that out there.
Tell me more.
Jan from Cannes, if you're going to discover a secret cousin and then you find out that the secret cousin, not only do you have a secret cousin, but she lives in the next province and she listens to the Archers, how exciting is that? You get all your excitingness-ment boxes ticked. Fantastic. So that's lovely. You can get together and listen to the Archers and you can force her to listen to Dumpty Dum as well. And then she can ring in and then it will all be lovely.
In it.
Hi, I'm Jack Smith, first time caller in a cooker of custard tuna bake on the forum. I work in accounts on the North Norfolk coast. I have a Dumpty mog called Julie. I've had some problems trying to identify which character I am. I started listening mid-2011 and I can't remember who was new. Henry was early 2011. So I'm regrettably not an archer, but maybe I'm a titchener. I hope not, but I could be. I'm calling in midweek to ask a simple question. Where is Charlotte? Because she had that interview with Rob, which we had to listen to. And, you know, obviously it caused us a bit of distress to think someone else might be snared up in his web of lies, etc. Since then, she's completely disappeared. I understand there's not really a need for Rob to employ her, but I'm just wondering why we got to listen to that, but we weren't able to listen to Ian and Helen meeting first time in however long when she was in prison. I just didn't really understand what the point of that was other than to get covered in the Express, which it was, and so on and so forth. So I presume she just read the media reporting and just made sure she stays away. Anyway, I hope to call in more. I've been listening to you guys since, just under a year, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Cheers.
Jack Smith now. He is a listener from 2011, but he doesn't want to be a titchener for completely understandable reasons. So we need to find another character that popped up at the same time as Rob so that we can call people that, because it's not fair to make anybody a titchener.
Well, let's just say it's a Charlie then, because Charlie came in at roundabout the same time, didn't he?
Or Henry, as he said. Henry was...
Okay.
No, hang on, because that would make him a titchener, wouldn't he?
Yes, because Henry took his name, didn't he? Yeah. That's call him a... You're a proper Charlie. There you go.
Yes, right, Charlie you are. Where is Charlotte? Yes, Charlotte was only there, I think, to show how delusional Rob was. I think that was...
But also to show us Rob's modus operandi, how he actually, you know, how subtle it is at the start. But you know, he's already got the
feeling about you.
Exactly. That's that was the reason for Charlotte, to give us, the listeners, the heebie-jeebies.
And also, Jack Smith, I am going to the North Norfolk coast for October half term. So if there's anywhere nice that you think I should see, then ring in and tell me where it is and I shall go to it, because I don't know that bit at all. Right, now, Christina Auckland.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Christina Auckland here, Khalifa on the Twitters. I just had to ring in because I'm giggling at Royfield, his pronunciation of my company. It's cornerstonelabs.co.uk. There's no S on stones. It's cornerstonelabs.co.uk. Royfield has been making me laugh quite a lot with it, although it is making me wonder if the name of my company is really, really poorly chosen. But there we go. Also, I feel a little bit responsible for the argument between Royfield and Lucy, not this week, but the week before. And I have got to say, I'm with Lucy. Toby he's a player, and I think he's going to get bored. Although, I'm not sure that Rex is going to pick up the pieces, so I may be changing my mind a little bit on that.
Anyway, I shall talk to you soon. Ta-ra for now. Bye.
I'll just back out of this call completely,
I was going to say, quite frankly, Christina, I am unbelieving that you are continuing to ring in. Did you know that the only reason Snickers is called Snickers is because Royfield kept calling them Matheron before? please don't change the name of your company just because we can't pronounce it. We're idiots.
No,
thank you for your patience, Christina.
I'm an idiot, Lucy.
But it's made her actually question whether or not it was a wise choice of company name. Do not start pulling on that thread, Christina. You and I are on the same page here about Toby. The man's an ass.
There is a slight little tiny whiny point, apart from the fact that I'm an idiot and I can't read things, right? And then my mouth has a life of its own. It's a bit like telephone numbers. You don't need to know them anymore. You just kind of just hit that person's name on your phone. Yes. And it's and URLs are kind of almost similar. You know, you see it on an email or a web link, you just kind of click on it, don't you?
Yeah.
And then, but then you're forced to kind of like read it out. And it's a bit like, oh, you know, type of thing. /.co.us.org, you know, it's a bit unwieldy, especially if your teeth and your tongue don't cooperate with you.
Well, anyway, thank you very much, Christina, for persevering with us. we've had an email from Cosmo, who has been accidentally sent the financial report for Brookfield.
Ooh.
And it says, for the size of your farm, it is odd. This is to David, I think. It is odd that you have as much diversification as you have with cows, sheep, the beef enterprise, and some cereal growing. Your wife's unexpected additional cash injection into the overall business has allowed that diversification to increase with you lending money to your brother, daughter, and son. We will remark further on these later. Are you a farmer or a banker? Yes, he does seem to be forking it over left, right and centre, doesn't he? Even more so than you would expect a farmer to, really. Overall, this year you've lost money because of the herd changeover and the revised calving pattern. We know that the money spent on promoting Hassett Hill's lamb has declined yet again. We have yet to see any payback on the loan made to Mr. Kenton Archer for the bull. We understand that Miss Pip Archer is not yet in a position to repay money from the Bullocks at Home Farm. You've lost the holiday rental income from Rickyard Cottage, which has also made this year worse. I can see penury beckoning here. and we're not sure why you should continue the rent-free arrangement with Mr. E. Grundy over one field. From our knowledge of the village, he now has enough land at Grange Farm to ensure the cider shed qualifies as an agricultural building.
Good grief.
It does mean that you've
loose.
What?
We just need to, when we're going to get Cosmo on the show so we can just dissect everybody's income.
It'd be so depressing. We'd all go off and jump in the lake.
In the Am.
Yeah, he says, he needs to give strong consideration to reworking your wills to ensure the right structure is in place in the long term. Aha, yes. Well, when Ambridge runs out of storylines, it always looks towards bequests, doesn't it? That's like a perennial. If either someone has an affair or someone decides
That's
to
what I was gonna
rehash
say,
their will.
Yeah.
So I can see that, especially now Josh and Pip are sort of, jockeying for position, so to speak. Joshying for position in terms of who's going to take over the farm. And apparently, you know, there's going to be sort of rivals with Alice and her newfound love of remote control farming or whatever it is she does. So, yeah. Oh, and we had another email from Borrowed Time, because you asked who... people on our listeners would like to hear on the show, which are actors. And Borrowed Time suggested, I, for one, would like to hear Derek Fletcher, Jean Harvey, Mrs. Noakes, Molly Butter, The Fat Ball, Baggy Snatch, Foster, Sabrina Thwaite, and Neville Booth. Although it is possible that they have been regulars on Dumpty Dum for months. I know. They all sit on the back. They sit further down the bed with Derek, and we have to mute them. So actually, they are all on it. Anyway, that's it. End of calls. End of emails.
Right. Just before we have a little advertisement break, Dumpty Dogs, don't forget, that is the hashtag for if you've got a little pooch and you want to kind of let your pooch have its moment in the sun. Now, our wondrous guest this week has got a Dumpty Dog. Oh, her name is Gertrude. And go on to dumptydum.com, put in the hashtag Dumpty Dog to see Gertrude in all of her wet nose finery. She looks awesome, and so does Isabel also. Let's see you the other side with a touch of Millie Bell and tweet of the last 7 days.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. Kat Brown here. If you found life in Ambridge a bit stressful of late, a bit lacking in baking competitions and double entendres that don't involve Lillian entering her gentleman's buttonhole, as excellent as that was, then may I make a very polite suggestion. Search for Soggy Bottoms in your podcasting toolkit and you'll head over to a Great British Bake Off fan podcast. In our latest episode, we interview Anna Tregorin herself, actress Isabel Middleton, about that storyline and her love of buns. So, if that sounds tempting, add us to your iTunes playlist. Even if we moulder away there like that Nutribullet you bought in 2014, we'll still love you very much, especially if you call in via SpeakPipe. On your marks, get set, speak!
When you don't have a roof over your head...
Build that wall. Build that wall.
There was nothing marked classified on my emails either sent or received.
Build that wall.
I am humbled to have been chosen by the Conservative Party to become its leader.
That Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the ocean from the perspective of the other.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you... Available from Sainsbury's for the Posher Washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Good day, everyone. Well, I'm back from Canberra. I got back just in time for the storms to hit South Australia and then Victoria. We were much luckier than South Australia. We didn't get a power blackout. But anyway, it's been interesting times. But back to the real world and, of course, the Archers. On our forum, which, as Royfield said last week, is getting very nicely busy, we've got a discussion about the Chaise Longue, started by Mouldy Rose. Go Emma, also by Mouldy Rose. We're asking who do you want on Dumpty Dum and why, which we're also asking on Facebook. That was started by Royfield. How often do you get it, by Julian Kelly. And On Your Todd, which was some clarification from Fiona Siobhan Powell. On our Facebook page, we have been talking about the Flower and Produce Show, which is quintessential Archers. And we were just discussing which events scream the Archers for us. And Fiona Siobhan Powell said, Flower and Produce gets me every time. There is invariably a chutney scandal or incident of the ginger biscuits, and I remember with cold dread the vicious competition of similar events, enough to make one's jam boil over and one's scones to fall flat. I like what you did there, Fiona. Alison Butler says, Open Farm Sunday. Whenever I see a banner for it in the real world, I worry about the event competing with whatever Brookfield is offering. Oh, that's gorgeous, Alison. Jacqueline Berto says, The Flower and Produce Show is the one for me. James Powell says, The Single Wicket. Liz Villalobos says, Quiz Night. Nick Austin, At one time when the Welsh chap ran the cat and fiddle, the Gay Pride March in London was at least as important as the Christmas Panto and the Flower and Produce Show put together. What on earth was his name? Sid hated him, which was a good enough reason for liking him even more. Lots more where that came from, so jump on if you'd like to see what others view are the most important parts. Royfield published that there, let there be a peal of the bells. The fatwa has been lifted. Isabel Middleton, who plays Anna Chigurh, is on next week's show. Thanks everyone who wrote letters to the BBC. And we really do thank everyone who wrote to the BBC because it's in all our interest. But, you know, you actually took the time to do it and we really appreciate that. So thank you. We also wondered when Josh became so tactful, he actually managed to stay out of spilling the beans about Toby, which I found very odd as he'd been so happy to gossip earlier. Catherine Kavanagh said perhaps he's got a sensitive, kind side to him after all. Unlike that appalling sister of his. What a cruel, nasty piece of work she is. Ooh. Rachel Lewis says he only told Ruth about Pip to get out of trouble himself. Perhaps he likes Rex and doesn't want to upset him. And actually, I think that you're probably spot on there, Rachel. Claire Asprey, saving it up to use at a more convenient time to suit him. Oh, we are cynics about him, aren't we? Rachel Hannah says, does he know Rex likes Pip? I'm confused. Yeah, I think he does. And a bit more in that vein. We are now waiting for actors to appear on the show again, starting with Anna. So those are all our conversations on Facebook. We would love you to join in. I mean, we really would love you to join in. So please find us on Facebook, or we would love you to get involved on the forum where all a variety of people are on there, but a lot of people are involved in both, so you know, you pick who you like to have chats with or pick your topic. And until then, I will see you next week. Hooroo!
Thank you, Millie. Luce.
Yes.
Hit us with those tweets.
Jim Parker said, as a penguin returning to the crowded colony can recognise its chick, so can Carol recognise her chutney. Jam Spangle, Jamie D, said, did Jazza. I'll show you how we treat bullies where I come from. Ties him up, plays bagpipes incessantly for 3 hours. Julia Mosedale said, after Friday's episode, still reeling. Haven't seen a villain uncovered so well since Scooby-Doo. Mim Monk said, this is like a Bake Off spin-off. That's not my chutney. I feel a hilarious spin-off series coming on. And tweet of the week is, once again, this man deserves a award for being the most tweety of the weeky person, is Hinge Zandel, who had Emma shouting, Fallon, cup of Earl Grey for the rapist on table five. And then sympathy tweet of the week, which we don't normally do, but this is a lovely one. Hannah Clark 74 said, I saved up Dumpty Dum and a week's worth of the Archers for today's train journey. I forgot my headphones. I'm crying. But then later there was a happy ending, because later on she tweeted a photo of some rather nasty looking neon pink headphones that she'd bought. So I'm very pleased. She said, I will not be beaten, she said.
And I'll tell you what else won't be beaten. Our shop on dumdydum.com. If you want a mug, a t-shirt, a baby grow, a flask.
We do them.
We do. We do all manner of apparel that you can even, can't even dream that has a Dumpty Dum logo on it, or some pithy little slogan or comment that Lucy thought up in her noggin. So if you want to put a little bit of gin in this, and it's an inappropriate container to have gin in, we have that too. So dumdydum.com/shop. However, dumdydum.com in and of itself is a wondrous thing too. And you can go there, you can add your own content, or you can even go onto our forum, which is going great guns right now, which I'm sure Millie Bell has just said, and you can kind of join in with the debate, because I know a lot of people actually like to talk about things on the forum and not on Facebook, because you can be somewhat anonymous on the old forum. But anyway, go there, dumdydum.com/forum or dumdydum.com, just for your Dumpty Dum needs. Now, Lucy, iTunes, yes. We've had more new reviews this week. You know what, Lucy?
Yeah.
We're in What's Hot in TV and Film.
Are we?
Yeah, and iTunes. He's like, whew, we're hot. Because not only is our traffic going up, but we're getting lots of lovely reviews. Now, this week we had one from Julia Chalk in Blighty.
Hasty Lanyon from The Colony That Got Away.
Back in soon-to-be Brexit Britain, we had Stedmans from Poochie Lavish.
Rebecca Say.
Bingley Baggy.
Born Again Swimmer.
And SQC107. Thank you for your iTunes reviews, folks. Now, you've been helping us keep our little show on the road through our fundraising for our Russian issue. You will have noticed, folks, that there is no more Russian intrusion. There's been no more Russian incursions on our forum for some time. So that little patch has worked. But the real work kind of starts now. I did say last week that we were going to give everybody a massive roll call of everybody that's kind of donated. But I know since we've actually been doing this show, a little donation has also come in. So I'm going to do it next week. And believe you me, it's a long list. We have a lot of people to thank. So that will happen next week. But if you do want to help us, that's quite simply, you can do it.
Do you think there's a Russian sitting somewhere with a white cat on his lap saying, "So, Mr. Brown, you think you have beaten me? I will be back."
No, absolutely. It's one of those kind of counterintuitive things that if somebody sees your website as being worthwhile to try and spam, actually, it's a sign of success. And that is actually what
it's like
done.
Having a stalker. You've got to be famous enough to have a stalker, haven't you? And celebrities that don't have one get a bit miffed sometimes.
No, listen, absolutely. Because it isn't just that it's some saddo who is posting this stuff on the site. They've actually written code specifically to get onto Dum-de-Dum so they can have 5, 10, 15 sign-ups a day to keep on posting links back to the same video sharing website. And it's in pure bloody Cyrillic. So somebody somewhere says, right, we need to get web links.
What is this, Peggy Archer?
Well, you know what it is. The link was. It's Matt and the Russian Mafia, wasn't it? You know, Ambridge has been on the Russian Mafia's kind of hit list ever since that. Years ago.
We can thank bloody Tiger for that, can't
well,
we?
Well, yeah, pussycat. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, we're digressing because we still have our guest waiting in the wings here, Lucy. And she's chomping at the bit. Now, if you've kind of don't want to hit that donate button and you say to yourself, I'd like to give these people regular money, how can they do that written in red, Lucy?
You can go to patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum, and you can donate $2 a show, which is about £1 and a bit.
Pounds fell again today, hasn't it, on news of...
£1, depending on Brexit. That's whatever.
Well, it's something, depending on Brexit. Remember to get in contact with us, folks. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our website. I've got a request. If you are sending in a SpeakPipe message, please, for the love of all things holy, don't leave the field where it says put your name and email address empty. Can you please fill it out? Because
adds... it's hell on earth for us to then
exactly.
figure out who's what.
I've been meaning to say this for about a month and I keep on forgetting.
Why did I did that? Do you just have to listen to everyone again?
You have to listen to everyone again because there is absolutely no way of knowing. And I don't want to point the finger at anybody, Yokel Bear, but there are some people... who absolutely refuse week after week. And it's all anonymous. And you have like 5 anonymouses and you're trying to edit them together and you're like, which anonymous is this? So please, Yokel Bear et al, please can you just put your name and email address there? Because it does mean that Dumpty Dums will be delivered to the whole Dumpty Dum universe that little bit quicker. Thank you very much.
You're holding up the whole operation, Yokel Bear.
To be fair to you, Yokel Bear, if you're the only person who was anonymous, it'd be pretty easy to figure out who's who. But you're not the only one. But you are a frequent offender, just saying. Or you can call us on 0203 031 3105 to leave us a telephonic message. on social media, specifically Twitter. You can find us where we're at Dumpty Dum. Me, I'm at Royfields, but R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. Harriet is at Sambridges.
Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
And I am at Barnacle Bell. Am I? I think I am. I'm at Barnacle Bell, yes.
Yes. Where did you come up with that?
I like sailing. My dad used to be in the Navy, so I like a barnacle. And obviously Bell is short for Isabel.
So. I
also like Captain Haddock in Tintin, who says a lot of blue blistering barnacles. So there we are.
On the Book of Face, you can go find us. Just simply type in Dumpty Dum, and you're just hit with a whole smorgasbord of lovely Dumpty Dumness. It's kind of more marshalled by the lovely Millie Bell. So go over to Facebook for some Facebook action. Luce, yep. Any passing shots?
Nope.
No? Right, smashing. Nope. All right.
Oh, someone else had a dream that Titchy Knob was shooting them, so it's not just me, because I just say that.
Hmm. All right.
It's me and one other nutter. There we go.
Yeah, one other total obsessive.
Yeah.
Smashing. Right, Isabel, over to you.
What, Royfield?
I really enjoy chatting to you.
Oh,
I was
leaving a pause then. I thought you were going to say something else. But
No, I really think, right, that you know, it was an interview of substance because, every now and then I play these things for a little bit of a laugh, a little bit of a giggle and whatever. But I really feel that I think the listeners, of which I'm the proxy for, that we glean something from you, the actor and the actor's work. And I really think that was good. And I don't know what the hell I'm saying.
Well, it all sounded lovely. I have enjoyed myself enormously.
Have
I mean,
really?
I have to say that coming on Dumpty Dum to talk to you, I was slightly nervous about it because obviously the only reason I want to talk to you is because I want to enhance the listener's experience. And what I really am nervous about is detracting from their enjoyment by either saying too much or too little or the wrong thing. You know, I know that listeners are extremely loyal and also quite outspoken, and I certainly wouldn't want to upset anybody by like the ones that don't like looking at your picture, not your picture, my picture. I know people have been quite vociferous about that. They don't want to know what we look like, and quite right too. So I just hope that talking to you has not detracted from their enjoyment of The Archers, which, let's face it, is the prime objective in all of this.
What we are is definitely a companion programme, a companion piece. Mm-hmm. And all it does is act as further fuel, really, to the whole thing. And I suppose that what we are is kind of the second, I'm going to say the second screen, but we're not a second screen. We're the second ear, aren't we?
So now we're hearing in stereo. No, it's marvellous.
Absolutely. What, I'll tell you one thing you didn't tell us about in your interview. Now we're at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Is this great play that you're writing, or plays that you've got. Tell us about those quickly.
I'll tell you very quickly. I've been writing for some time, and I am trying to get one of several plays into development. The trouble being that I'm actually quite... I am quite good at writing. I'm very good at writing dialogue, but I'm slightly less good. There we are. That's literary for you, isn't it? I'm not so good at story structure. So this is something I need to work on. I also tend to write rather epic plays that have kind of, you know, they stretch over continents and centuries and have casts of about 45.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Five, which is in these austere times, particularly for the arts, they're not the easiest thing to put on. So I'm currently trying to write a two-person play that takes place in one room.
Wowza. And then, so tell us about the whole process of, say, let's say you've written this play, then what would be the next step?
Oh, God. Well, if I knew that, I wouldn't be here. I'd be having my plays put on all around the world, wouldn't I? It's difficult. It is difficult. And, you know, without wishing to harp on this idea of being, older, I think it's much easier to start out as a playwright if you're kind of in your late teens or up to the age of about 30, because there are all sorts of resources for young writers, because, of course, every theatre or producer wants to discover the next big thing. And it's quite right too. There should be support for all these people. But if you're somebody who is coming to writing perhaps in your middle years, as I am, it's actually very difficult.
Isabel, let me just back up, right? I know for a fact I'm older than you and I'm nowhere near my middle years. So let's
okay. Okay, what years are we close to then?
Well,
are we in our second youth? No, that's when you're really old, isn't it?
I am going to be 48 in December.
Oh, well, I'm older than you, Royfield.
Oh, you are in your middle years then.
I am. I'm over that hill. No, I'm very. I'm obviously very youthful and flighty.
You don't look it, though, do you?
No, I don't. I find that a regular intake of monkey glands has kept me sort of supernaturally young looking. That's very kind of you to say so. You've obviously been looking at some old photographs of mine. But no, on a more serious note, just to finish what I was saying, is that it is hard to get to have a complete change of direction at this age, because there aren't many resources for, you know, 50-something-year-old actors who want to become writers, because who wants to listen to what we've got to say? But actually, I feel that I'm at a time in my life when I do have something to say. So it's not without its challenges. It's slightly like pushing an elephant up the stairs, but I think we may have reached the half landing along with Caroline and Oliver's chaise longue. I'm going to, you know, continue and hopefully get something on the stage.
Well, listen, best of luck with that. And let's just end up with a very quick fire round.
Right? Oh, God. Okay.
All right. So tell us the first Archer storyline you can remember when you sat on Nanny's knee.
Elizabeth getting pregnant.
Okay.
Granny was horrified.
Who's your best pal amongst the Archer's crew?
I'd have to. Oh gosh, that's difficult because they are all lovely. But I spent lots of time
who's loveliest?
Louisa Paticus, who plays Helen, and the marvellous Eleanor Bron, who plays my mum.
Okay, all right. Which dum-de-dum caller in is your favourite?
Oh, I always like listening to. Is it Witherspoon? Mm-hmm. He always sounds like a character from an Armistead Maupin novel, and
doesn't
I always like that.
Doesn't he just?
Yeah, I like him.
And in an ideal world, how long would your tenure on The Archers be?
Until I...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Got my clogs.
Yay for that.
Yeah.
Isabel Middleton, you are most awesome. Thank you for coming on.
It's my absolute pleasure, Roy Field, and thank you and all your listeners.
Cool. All right, Luce, we're done.
Okay, right.
All right.
I keep thinking we're going to be shorter this week,